Hello, this is Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, October 1st, 2020. Can you believe it? Illinois impact. Woman in 80s becomes 21st in Champaign County to lose life to virus. Four Vermillion preschoolers positive. Champaign County reported its first coronavirus-related death in 41 days, a woman in her 80s with underlying health conditions. The county's recovered case count grew by 40 while the 7-day positivity rate remained 0.5%. Halloween guidelines issued by state health officials encourage alternatives to trick-or-treating and the reminder that costume masks don't qualify as permissible face coverings. For the full guidelines, visit newsgazette.com. CU Public Health's Awas Vade said we don't completely agree with the state's move to exclude Champaign County data from Region 6 metrics due to huge U of I numbers, but we definitely understand their dilemma. A month to forget in Vermillion County ended with 27 new cases, four involving preschoolers, and a 7-day positivity rate of 7.8%. The county entered September with 330 cases. It heads into October with 701. Seven of 361 Champaign County residents with cases classified as active are hospitalized. In Vermillion, it's 11 of 124. Neither Ford, 19 active cases, nor Pyatt, 13, has a resident hospitalized. And there's a big headline with a photo that says mural support. Historic and really big, painting to bring life to Tuscola Museum's wall. Growing up, Ainsley Heilich didn't have to go further than his parents' antique store or even leave his house, which was 200 years old, to catch a glimpse of history. Old things have always been something that have been a part of my life. He said, it's never been something where I was like, let me check our history. Heilich moved to Tuscola 9 years ago, and the town embraced him. He opened up a tattoo parlor called Vintage Karma, and when he met Douglas County Museum President Anna Miller, she didn't have to try hard to convince him to join the museum's board and become its vice president. The support he felt in the town continued through what he called a very public gender transition, something he knows many people wouldn't expect from a small rural town surrounded by cornfields. Now he's making a mark on the town that he's made his home. A few months ago, he and Miller began speaking about painting a mural on the long gray wall of the museum. While the building is an appropriate size and space for the museum, the converted IGA grocery store isn't exactly eye-catching. We have a very plain building, Miller said. The size is great, but there's nothing that speaks to county history on the outside. After they reached out to several mural artists and finding the cost prohibitively expensive, Heilich, who has a degree in art history from Virginia Commonwealth University, began drawing up a design of his own on his iPad. Spanning the entire 110-foot-long, 11-foot-high wall, the mural features ears of corn on one side and a steam train, the type that actually would have gone through town in centuries past on the Illinois Central Railroad line, on the other. It features a horse and buggy to honor the Amish and a Raggedy Ann doll which originated in Arcola. It has an old farm windmill next to modern windmills that were recently built just outside of Newman and an apple to honor the yearly Apple Dumpling Festival in Atwood. The words Douglas County Museum are weaved into the design, spelled out in large letters. It'll include a QR code that takes visitors to a website that shows what each object represents. We were looking for something that would be a really grab attention, Heilich said. We wanted something that would have a lasting impact, where people could come and take selfies with it and stand by certain objects. Something that's interactive, that's educational, and just looks cool. In total, he spent 35 hours on the design, which the iPad tracks. Now others will have a chance to get involved. Heilich, Miller, and other local artists will draw outlines, and volunteers from the community will be welcome to come paint inside the lines. On October 17th and October 24th, they'll have beverage vendors because the wall is so long, Heilich said, there's enough space to keep socially distant when numerous people are there. We wanted as many people involved in it as possible to feel ownership of it as well, Miller said. Prospective volunteers can email DouglasCountyMuseum@hotmail.com or VintageKarma@gmail.com to participate. Heilich hopes the project inspires other organizations, businesses, and artists to beautify the town he's grown to love. My hope is that it can be something to kick off doing more murals around town, he said. It would be cool, something that can be a tourism draw and community pride. Ask the admin, a daily question for the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District's Julie Pride. We are thinking ahead to the holidays to try to plan a safer way to get together. Through the pandemic, none of us have socialized inside, and we have all taken the recommendation for distancing, mask wearing, and frequent testing very seriously. Our plan, all nine of us work and attend school from home. The week of Thanksgiving, we get tested on, say, Monday, then stay home until the holiday, when we will gather, assuming all tests are negative, of course. One concern is the possibility of a false negative test. What are the rates for false negatives for the Marketplace and the University of Illinois tests? Are there other things we are overlooking? Flaws in the plan? The current false negative rate with the nasal swab RT-PCR tests, like those done at the community-based testing at Marketplace Mall, Carl and Christie, are around 20%. The U of I saliva test is similar. The quarantining seems to be a good strategy, assuming everyone does it for at least 14 days. Quarantining means remaining in your home with no others coming in. For a quarantine to be effective, everyone must adhere to it. There's a photograph of a car driving over the railroad crossing on Mattis Avenue near Hedge Road in Champaign. A few days before, the busy thoroughfare will close for the crossing to be replaced. Beginning Monday, Mattis will be closed between Hedge and Parla Drive near the U.S. Postal Service and Dodds Park. During its closure, Norfolk Southern Railway will replace its crossing there, according to the Illinois Department of Transportation. The road is expected to be closed for 5 to 10 days. Christie Clinic Illinois Marathon. Without vaccine, race officials hit pause. Jan Seeley readily admits that her reaction will consist of the next time she sees runners line up at the start of the Christie Clinic Illinois Marathon, with State Farm Center and Memorial Stadium in the background. I think I'm going to be bawling the whole weekend, Seeley said Wednesday. The variety of emotions Seeley and Mike Lindemann, the marathon co-directors, have felt for the last 6+ months because of the coronavirus pandemic continues to swirl. That's because there's no guarantee the marathon race weekend that typically brings thousands of people to Champaign-Urbana every spring since 2009, but didn't in 2020 because of the pandemic, will even take place next year. Seeley announced Wednesday that organizers are pausing registrations for the 2021 race, scheduled for April 29th to May 1st. The 2020 race, set for April 23rd to 25th, was postponed in mid-March at the onset of the pandemic, with plans to possibly run it this fall before race organizers decided to cancel the 2020 version in mid-May. We're just staying in the present moment with the pandemic, Seeley said, told the News Gazette. We're not in a silo here. If there's not going to be a vaccine soon for COVID-19, we don't see how we can have the race. Seeley said if the situation around COVID-19 improves in the next few months, they will open registrations back up with hopes of having the race at some point in 2021, either in the spring or fall. Seeley said 5,600 people have already registered for the 2021 race weekend since they opened registration in June, but only about 250 are new participants. We can't sell hope, Seeley said. Do we want to be doing this? No. Is it the responsible, prudent thing to do? Absolutely. The possibility of having the marathon weekend in the fall of 2021 is one Seeley and other race officials are considering if next spring is a no-go. Seeley said they'll need to have discussions with the University of Illinois Division of Intercollegiate Athletics and Illinois Athletic Director Josh Whitman about that possibility, since the race ends at the 50-yard line inside Memorial Stadium, and Illinois football could have a traditional fall schedule in 2021. If we get to January and there's still no vaccine, that pretty much kills April, Seeley said. If we get through the football season and have a conversation with Josh and his staff and pick a date in the fall, then we pick up some time. Again, though, the presence of a vaccine is dependent upon when the next Christie Clinic Illinois Marathon will take place, Seeley said. If we are able to get a vaccine and able to roll it out and the medical community here supports it, can we get a date working with the DIA? Seeley said, we're emotionally prepared for there to be no Christie Clinic Illinois Marathon in 2021 because of the status quo right now. Seeley said there is no race weekend in 2021, and all participants who have already registered for the 2021 race will receive an entry into the 2022 race. The 2022 race weekend is scheduled for April 28th to 30th. Virtual running events geared around the marathon are in the works, too, Seeley said, with a national virtual turkey trot planned to help support United Way of Champaign County. Another virtual run will take runners across the state on two possible different routes, giving them information on towns they would stop in, Seeley said. Back to reality, though, Seeley said, the race weekend is a multi-million-dollar event, and hundreds of thousands of dollars were already spent on the 2020 race before the pandemic forced a change of plans. We buy our shirts, our medals, and our bags, Seeley said. We typically have to do that in the fall, and we had close to $150,000 tied up in race shirts. Once we knew we were going to have to cancel, we didn't have an insurance policy that had a pandemic clause. We are taking the steps we need to still be in the game, and because we didn't have to bring the race to the finish line this year, we're sitting on that money, and we have to keep sitting on it because that money can't be gone when the race returns. Seeley is confident the marathon race weekend will return to CU, and when it does, it'll signify a moment unlike any other before in the event's history. I think it's going to be epic, Seeley said. People will be so grateful. Mike and I feel honored, so honored to be doing what we do anyway, but I hope our legions of runners feel like we've taken care of them at this time. I've literally taken thousands of emails and phone calls from our participants this year who either want to yell at us or help us out. I hope they'll remember the humanity that we showed, and I think everybody is going to be so excited to get back. I guarantee you there's going to be tears, but they're going to be tears of happiness. Top of the morning, something to get you started today, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Emmy Tarr can't wait to show off her high school today for the News Gazette's growing Snapchat audience. Leroy has a small town, big heart mentality and provides great opportunities for their students, the senior said. I have the opportunity to be a three-sport athlete and be involved in many different clubs that have helped me become who I am today. Tarr, one of 38 student journalists participating in Year 5 of High School Confidential, will take us behind the scenes at Spirit Week. Follow along by searching for News Gazette on the app, then pick up Friday's print edition for Tarr's latest news and notes about the Panthers. With no homecoming dance or football game to celebrate, Leroy is making do during the this pandemic. Spirit Week has been a blast with a pickleball tournament and staff scavenger hunt. On Friday night, the school and community will celebrate with a band and choir concert at Kiwanis Park. Everyone's invited, wearing masks and spread apart. I love the fact that we haven't been able to be together for so long, and we are finally getting to come together and have some fun, Tarr said. And we have Jim Dye's opinion column. Without Madigan, corruption shows still went on. Include me out. Illinois House Speaker Michael Madigan channeled Malaprop King and late Hollywood executive Samuel Goldwyn when he rejected legislators' invitation to testify Tuesday about the Commonwealth Edison bribery scandal in which he allegedly played a central role. But his ears must have been burning along with his already marginal reputation after ComEd executive David Glockner described how the utility giant provided Madigan friends and associates with no-show jobs for the express purpose of winning the speaker's political favor. Glockler named a who's who of Madigan associates as hirelings for whom no work product could be identified. They were paid through a lobbying firm then overseen by former ComEd lobbyist Jay Doherty, the ousted head of the City Club of Chicago. Glockner also described other no-work payments for Madigan associates that were funneled through lobbying firms overseen by, among others, close Madigan friend and ComEd lobbyist Michael McCain, former Madigan staffer Shaw DeCremer, and ex-state representative John Bradley, a Marion Democrat who says a member of the Speaker's House leadership team. While the three Democrats on the House Investigating Committee did their best to shield Madigan from a direct tie-in to the alleged 9-year bribery scheme, commentators were disgusted by what they heard. Citing Madigan's three Democratic defenders, Chicago Sun-Times columnist Mark Brown said, "The real question is how long the rest of the Democratic colleagues will continue with the charade. Madigan needs to go." Madigan, of course, isn't going anywhere. He's a tough guy who's hanging tough. Indeed, in declining to testify, Madigan claimed to be pure as the driven snow. "I cannot provide information I do not have, and I cannot answer questions about issues of which I have no knowledge or conversations to which I was not a party. I have provided all the answers I can give," he wrote in a letter to the committee. Some names that came out, Michael Zalewski, McLean Doherty, have already been linked to the $1.3 million in bribes the utility paid. But none of those named or unnamed, including ousted ComEd CEO Ann Primaggio and former ComEd executive and lobbyist John Hercker, will be testifying. ComEd confessed its role in the conspiracy in July, agreeing to pay a $200 million fine. Nonetheless, Madigan stridently attacked the instigator of the House probe, Republican leader Jim Durkin. He contends that it is a political stunt motivated by a transparent political agenda that, of course, is true. The GOP is trying to score political points at Madigan's expense. In fact, the probe is so unprincipled and deceitful, it's exactly what Madigan, one of those nicknames in the Velvet Hammer, would have done to Durkin if their positions were reversed. Meanwhile, the ComEd snowball continues to roll down the hill. Even as the legislative hearing got underway Tuesday afternoon, former ComEd executive Fidel Marquez pleaded guilty to bribery charges. The only person to be charged so far, Marquez is cooperating with federal investigators in exchange for a sentence of probation. Marquez pleaded guilty to overseeing a $37,500 payment in July 2018 to Company One, a substantial portion of which was intended for Madigan Associates. Marquez's cooperation will put more pressure on other ComEd executives, particularly Primaggiore, to work out a plea agreement with prosecutors. In addition to the legal and legislative developments, WBEZ Radio in Chicago reported that the Democratic committee chairman sought Madigan's help in securing employment. Representative Emmanuel Chris Welch acknowledged seeking jobs for six people, including his wife and mother, with the Pritzker administration. Only one was hired. Welch attributed his solicitation of Madigan's assistance to his lifelong fight for diversity, equity, and inclusion for black people, especially black women, and most especially Welch's relatives. ComEd's deferred prosecution agreement requires it to cooperate with investigators, but it continues to pay a high price. It's been hit with a series of civil lawsuits and widely excoriated in the public eye. The company's admissions before the committee will further damage its reputation. It's unclear how far this politicized investigation will go, with few witnesses agreeing to testify. Not, of course, that it matters much with the election less than 6 weeks away. Republicans don't have to keep the story in the news for long. Talk of the towns. Among today's topics, Monticello store opening, Mahomet school update. Monticello, the past month or so, has been a whirlwind for Mike Verdon, who has recently named the store manager for the soon-to-open Tractor Supply Company in Monticello. He said contractors will convert the former Shopko in about 3 months' time in order to open in early November. It will be store number 2525 for the company that was founded in 1938 and, according to Verdon, at about 35,000 square feet, one of the largest in Illinois. "We're going to have a soft open on November 7th. I think the grand opening will be November 14th, said Verdon, a Pena High graduate who lives in Tower Hill. He was a Tractor Supply store manager for about a year and a half in Shelbyville prior to taking the Monticello post. Excuse me. We're trying to figure out staff, making sure we find the right people who are correct for the job, he said. We've had construction trucks here with registers and fixtures. We'll start this week. In the next 2 weeks, you'll be really seeing the store come together. Mahomet. The Mahomet Seymour School District will remain with its current hybrid learning model until January. During its September 21st meeting, the school board voted to move to 4 days a week of in-person learning beginning the second semester. Superintendent Lindsay Hall said while January sounded far away, there was a lot of work that had to be done if the district wanted to move forward with in-person learning for the second semester, Hall said. Monies would need to stay as remote learning days for the entire year so teachers could plan and complete professional development. Paxton. The Paxton Chamber of Commerce is holding a wine and chocolate walk from 11 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday. Only 150 tickets will be sold. Call 217-379-4655 to order them. Hoopston. Drive-through and walk-up coronavirus testing at no cost will be available from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday at Hoopston Area High School. Testing will also take place Sunday at the Vermilion County Health Department. Tuscola. The village is holding a Drive Boo trick-or-treating event October 31st at Irvin Park. Participants will be encouraged to stay in their cars to maintain social distancing. Those passing out candy will be wearing masks and gloves. Tolono. Unity Education Association members volunteer to pick up litter adopting a stretch of U.S. 45 in Tolono. Sydney. The village's community-wide fall garage sales are set to take place today through Saturday. Playing and working at Champaign Parks. There's a picture above. People practicing and social distancing while fishing Wednesday at Kaufman Lake in Champaign. And below there's a picture. Bob Ginger, an arbor specialist with the Champaign Park District, installs edging Wednesday in preparation for new metal panels on a roof of the pavilion at Centennial Park. Several roofs at area parks have been redone this year on an as-needed basis. And there's a picture of the new Costco gas station in Champaign with the headline, Costco Gas Station Open for Business. While Costco isn't opening until October 22nd, its gas station opened Wednesday. Crews were still rolling out sod Wednesday as the first customers lined up for $1.99 a gas, 5 cents cheaper than at nearby rival Sam's Club. Only members can buy the gas from one of the 24 pumps at the station on North Neal Street, just south of where the Costco will be located, in the former Bergner's location at Marketplace Mall. Costco began stocking its 152,000 square foot warehouse last week. We have the Teacher of the Week with the quote, "Kids have to feel safe in order to learn." In her 18th year of teaching, Carissa Culbertson spent her summer studying, whether she was watching videos on remote teaching or contacting experts. Principal Wendy Starwalt said she wanted to come into the school year prepared, even before the district knew what direction it was going with in-person learning. She's been quick to adjust on the fly after the school year began, Stalwart said, which is part of what makes this Teacher of the Week such a valuable member of her staff. Her standout quality is she never lets the challenges get her down, Starwalt said. She starts looking for answers to be the best teacher she can be. When I walk down the hall, I can hear all this animated language and learning, and it's just Carissa in front of the camera. I find my work important because I get to have fun and learn every day with the coolest, funniest group of kids. To think I'm playing a small part in shaping up their little minds as they're soaking up everything around them is a huge honor and blessing. I became a teacher because no day is the same, and I can't imagine sitting still every day. We are constantly trying new things, and I have had so many teachers in my life who have inspired me. Some of my best memories of school are because of the things my teachers did to make school fun. My favorite, most unique lesson that I teach is I love a good experiment where we can really get hands-on and messy. When the kids are excited and take over, that is when the learning happens. STEM projects are my favorite for sure. In the past, we've made apple towers and bubble gloves, dissected owl pellets, designed and engineered inventions to solve any problem we can think of, and turned our classroom into a rainforest. I love using a science or social studies topic to create a full unit and pull in the other subjects. The kids are engaged and learn even more. Something else I'm passionate about. We have to take care of the whole child in order for them to feel safe, supported, and connected. Social emotional learning is, in my opinion, the most important thing we can provide as educators. Kids have to feel safe in order to learn. Using conscious disciplines in my classroom has helped me remember that and keep it at the center of my daily practice. My favorite teacher and subject to study was, that's such a hard question. Mrs. Bradley in second grade at St. Mary's School in Sterling was my very first favorite teacher. She always let me stay and help with her things and made me feel so special and connected. Mr. Underwood at Challenge Junior High in Sterling made math real by assigning us careers complete with paychecks, taxes, and a checkbook we had to balance daily. And Mr. Armstrong, also at Challenge Junior High, made science so fun with lots of projects and experiments. I engage students during this strange time by doing everything that I can to make learning fun and real. Virtual is so tricky, but having the belief that it can work is important. I've learned by watching other teachers online, asking questions, and trying new things. Lots of songs, movement, and incorporating projects whenever I can has helped keep things fun. I know when we're having fun, the kids are feeling safe and cared for, which results in the right environment to learn. If I weren't a teacher, I used to think I wanted to be a meteorologist because I love weather and science, but I've always joked that I need to work somewhere I can shop a lot to get a discount. Health and fitness are also a passion of mine, so I have worked to support other women to be healthy inside and out. My most fulfilling moment on the job was whenever former fabulous firsties tell me something they remember and enjoyed from first grade years later, like when they're graduating high school. Champaign County excluded because U of I testing is so extensive. Positivity rate for Region 6 goes from 2.2% to 7.1% with that change. If recent trends continue, East Central Illinois could soon face additional COVID-19 mitigation measures now that the state is excluding data from Champaign County. The data is being excluded because the University of Illinois massive testing program is overshadowing trends in the region, Illinois Department of Public Health Director Nozoki Aziki said at a virtual news conference held Wednesday. We want to ensure that the large volume of tests at the Urbana-Champaign does not overshadow the trends that we're seeing in the broader region, and we don't want to be inhibited from taking action to keep people safe, Aziki said. If regional metrics are tripped in Region 6 by looking at the data in this way, the entire region, including Champaign County, will still be required to implement mitigation efforts. Region 6 has a positivity rate of 2.2%, but without Champaign County, it's at 7.1%, up from 6.2% in mid-September. The region, which stretches from Iroquois to Fayette counties, faces additional mitigations if it has 3 consecutive days with its 7-day average positivity rate at or above 8%. That could include closing bars and restaurants at 11 p.m., no indoor dining, and limiting meetings to 25 people. Awas Bay, Deputy Administrator at the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District, said, "We don't completely agree with the move to exclude Champaign County data, but we definitely understand their dilemma." This has been Mary Mortland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, October 1st, 2020. Please stay tuned for Part 2.